Baroque music has some pretty heavy hitters in terms of classical music. Your Four Seasons, your Bachs, your Handels, your Pachelbel's Canon, which you might recognise either from any movie wedding scene ever or sampled in the 1999 hit As We Go On by Vitamin C. But what makes it so sampleable? Here to explain the basis for this important movement is conductor and artistic director of Pinchgut Opera, Aaron Hellyard. Great to see you.
G'day.
Thanks for coming by. Quite often, eras of opera are discussed, but for a moment, I want to go right back to the beginning of how we went from Greek theatre and plays to opera.
Amazing, yeah. No, it's one of those great turning points in music history. And I think I just want to start by saying how important music was in an era before recorded music. So in the past, you know, nowadays we've got our iPhones, we listen to radio, music surrounds us. It's in our iPods, it's in our gyms. But before recorded music in the Baroque period, if you wanted to hear music, you had to go out and actually find it or make it yourself. And so what happens is music becomes this extremely important part of culture. People love to go out and they're really moved by music in ways that when you read descriptions of people listening to music in the past, it sometimes strikes us as kind of unusual. A bit like when the first cinema took place and, you know, there's a camera underneath a train and everyone ducked. You know, nowadays we see that as a bit silly because we're used to all this stuff.
And the suspension of disbelief was there in original Greek tragedy for sure. I mean, were these people really feeling these sentiments? Were they really feeling these highs and lows?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's exactly the point. So this is where opera comes in, because global culture had been used to people performing texts, you know, like plays. And of course, you would hear the spoken word in courts, in open, you know, politicians arguing their cases, generals arguing for war. But you very rarely heard people sing. And the wonderful thing about singing is when you combine singing with a text is it's louder. So if you're in a theatre and you think about an outdoor theatre in ancient Greece, it's only so much you can project your voice. But when you're inside a sort of wooden structure, like a modern theatre you would see in the Renaissance, if you sing, actually you can more people can hear you. So the very first thing about opera when it first starts to emerge in the beginning of the 17th century is that when people went to see this crazy new thing, they actually said, we have a letter of someone said, I'm about to go see a play and it's going to be sung, which is kind of crazy, you know? So the first thing is that it's a unique conjoining of text and music.
So around about the 1600s, you've got Baroque opera starting to kind of kick off in Italy. There are mixed beliefs about whether it's got its name from one of the theories that it sort of relates to the imperfect pearls that Spanish divers collected, which expanded to include obscure thought. Anything different, strange, or out of the ordinary. Does that ring true historically? Is there a kind of precedent for that?
Yeah, well, Baroque is a word that we use. It comes from the 19th century and people used it to describe art of this period, but they never used the word at the time. So Monteverdi, who invented opera, he wouldn't have used the word Baroque. In fact, he called it the new practice, or seconda pratica. That's his name for it, because he distinguished between two styles, something called the prima pratica, the first style, and that's polyphony. That's when lots of voices are combined together, and that's what distinguished Western music for hundreds of years before Monteverdi came on the scene. And then he distinguished this new kind of music, which is basically opera, and he called it the second practice, or the new practice. Some people called it la nuova musica, the new music. And all it is basically a solo voice exclaiming text expressively against a set of harmonies, which are played on plucked instruments. And in this respect, they were trying to emulate what they thought was Greek practice. So people would be playing lyres, we call them theorbos, in emulation of what they thought the ancient Greeks did, playing lyres and declaiming in these theatres. Nowadays, we know that ancient Greek tragedy wasn't sung, it was spoken. But in the late Renaissance, they thought it was, and that's how opera came about.
And talk to me about the relative rhythms of both spoken or sung Italian and spoken or sung French, because there's an innate rhythm to these languages, you'd have to agree, and all Latin languages.
Exactly, yeah. Now, the amazing thing that all of our opera listeners, all of our opera lovers listening would know, that one of the beauties of opera, is that words can be repeated and they can be repeated expressively. And that's something that really changes when you're in a play. I mean, you might have a repetition that's expressive in Hamlet, like to be or not to be. There's a repetition there. But in opera, to be one word might be set by the composer in an extraordinary way. So you're absolutely right. French and Italian have a beautiful set of pure vowels that work really well when you sing, and composers of the time really exploited that purity in beautiful and expressive ways.
This period, Baroque, very much known as an opulent time. We're talking art architecture that was extremely ornate and decorative. You've got a flourish in clothing, art, indeed the music as well. You've used the term word painting for the operas of the time, and I think I've got a sample here from Monteverdi's Lamento della Nifta. Have a listen. Obviously some beautiful tones there. How many voices are we hearing there?
We're hearing three gentlemen, yeah, with what's called a basso continuo, which was another great invention of Baroque music. And that basso continuo is just a bass line with some plucked instruments. And in this case, it's a harpsichord, or maybe an organ might be involved, and the theorbo evoking those sort of ancient Greek vibes. But yeah, we heard a beautiful piece. This is by Monteverdi. It's called Lamento della Ninfa, the Lament of the Nymph. And these guys are setting up the scene for us. And they're saying that there's this beautiful nymph that starts very consonantly. You might have heard at the beginning of that excerpt, it's very pure. All the intervals are in harmony together and it sounds very rested. But then at the very end of that, we heard a really almost ugly sound. And that's Monteverdi using something what we called word painting. And this is at the key, Andy, of all Baroque music and why it sort of became so important, is that the word that Monteverdi uses to paint is, it's a wonderful line of text. It says, her face was a pale temple in the ruins of her grief. And that word grief, dolore in Italian, he sets it like it's almost, it's a painful sound. It's extremely discordant. It doesn't sound rested anymore. It doesn't sound pure. And it's that expression. It's a bit like when you might taste a dish and suddenly you get a little bit of pepper or you get a little spice. And if we didn't have those dissonances, those spices, everything would be quite bland. So composers like Monteverdi really use these discordant sounds to actually create pleasure, stress and release. And this is what people went nuts for, because you can't do that in a play. You can maybe say her grief or something like that, but to do it musically and to do it so differently, you suddenly open up the world to a variety of, like a universe of expression, and it deepens the text for a listener. That little example had three people singing. And in fact, we nowadays call sometimes word painting a madrigalism because it comes from madrigals, which are multi-voiced compositions. But in the next excerpt, we'll hear what is more operatic when you get a single voice able to do these madrigalisms, these word paintings, and how that was basically the best thing since sliced bread.
Let's take a listen. Such feeling, such sentiment. I think the sentiment there is, quote, I am destroying myself because of him. This is really the crux of that sentiment. Tell me about the word painting there.
So this is an extraordinary moment of what we might call the new practice. So the first example we heard was a little bit of the older practice. And this is really the new style that is going to define opera and bring us into the age of Taylor Swift, really, where you've got a single voice being able to exclaim dramatically over a sort of rhythmic bass. So in this case, this is a lament, which is a specific kind of 17th century genre. And the lament's fascinating because it has a repeating bass line, which our listeners heard. It's just four notes. It goes bum, 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 bim, much slower than that. And that repetition sort of paints a character. It's often a woman who's entrapped in her lamenting, in her pain. So that's the first structure. Very much like a rock song, you know, it's just four chords that are being repeated. But what Monteverdi does above it is genius. He's got those three gentlemen just commenting in the background about this poor nymph. And the words that the nymph is saying, exactly as you say, there's a lovely moment where Monteverdi descends the line at the end of that excerpt. And it's to paint her utter descent into despair. But he does it so using all those spicy dissonances that we talked about before. It's not always pure. There's some ugly notes. There's some sour notes. And it's that combination of purity and sour. And it's not all beautiful. You mentioned opulence before. And it's exactly that, because when you look at a Baroque building, there are very solid lines, but then off those solid lines are little tiny ornaments and embellishments and even ugly things like gargoyles, you know, which are meant to set off the beauty of the other parts of the architecture. And that's exactly what we hear in this beautiful excerpt.
And such literalism as well, which I hadn't fully appreciated before. If you've just joined me on Our End Drive, Pinchgut Opera's artistic director, Aaron Helliard, is here. He's a Baroque enthusiast. We're talking and learning about Baroque opera here on RN Drive. I've always wondered, this is going to sound like a really stupid question, but what is the best way to listen to opera? Because I think people are swayed by the sort of pathos, but then there's also the logos and the sort of structure. And I know that, and I was watching you listen, and you listen dually, you listen to both. You're not just tied to the technicality, you're also listening to the sentiment. So what is your advice? Do you just let it wash over you and take what you can take? What are you listening for? What are you seeking?
Yeah, that's a great question, Andy, because when I was a kid, I got into opera by sitting down and reading the text along with the music. Because for most of us nowadays, we listen to most pop music is vocal music, you know, and Taylor Swift is all over the news at the moment. She's probably the most influential woman in the world, and she's a singer. She's a vocalist. She uses the English language to communicate these expressive ideas that reach millions of people. And so too with opera. I think one thing that might deter the first time listening to opera is the fact that it's in another language. So when I was a kid, I would listen to all these amazing operas and I would read the translation and hear exactly what we heard in those excerpts and hear, oh my gosh, the composer is setting that word in this amazing way. Oh, hear how the composer's changing this line. And then also I would be appreciating the beauty of the singer and how they might be interpreting the composer in the text. So my advice would be sit down with a libretto if you can, or listen to an opera in English, and then that's the gateway to this enormous, huge treasure trove of riches that we have from the Baroque period. There are more operas in the Baroque period than there were in the 19th century.
Is that right?
Yeah, just because so many were written at so many times. Whereas in the 19th century, they're much bigger. It was much more of an industrial sort of complex. So the production slowed down. And if you think about all the very famous operas, they're probably from the 19th century, but there's many more to be discovered in the Baroque period.
I knew you'd say that. And tell me about the kind of audience response, because, you know, these days the audience is more or less expected to be sort of silently appreciating the music, but that wasn't always the way. Paint me a picture of the audience back in Monteverdi's time.
This is my biggest regret about opera, is that when it was formed, audiences were not silent, absorptive, and reverent like they would be in a church. They were vociferous.
A bit more like Taylor Swift's concert.
Absolutely. They were vociferous, exuberant. They let their pleasure known, but they equally let their displeasure known. And there was a very strong rapport between the artist singing on the stage and the audience, and they were really noisy. So we know that in the 18th century particularly, they would be quiet for the arias, which are the moments when the singer shows off their art with ornamentation and the orchestra's playing. But then there's often a sort of storytelling component in opera, and we call that recitative, which just means a reciting style. And they'd be really noisy through it. There's a wonderful letter of one guy says, oh, I like the recits because it gives me a chance to play chess. But we know from journals that when people were in boxes in theatres, they had sex, they took drugs, they often had food brought to them. There's a lot of accounts that some big private boxes had their own harpsichords in them. So people were playing music in these tiny little apartments whilst an opera was taking place. And it was a real meeting point for the elites of the city. And also Venice was the Las Vegas of the 17th century. I mean, this is where everyone
Sin City,
went.
Yeah.
And next to opera houses were brothels and restaurants, and all these institutions would work together. So sadly what happened, Andy, is Wagner came along.
Everything got a bit dour,
and
did it?
Everything just got very serious. It's changed our behaviour ever since. So
Trust a German to come
Well,
along.
Wagner comes along, and what he does is he dims the auditorium. He makes sure that the seats in a theatre have raked so everyone can see the stage. He stops the boxes so people aren't looking at each other but rather the stage. He puts the orchestra underneath the stage. And so what happens is it's more like modern day cinema. You just have one image. But opera before Wagner was much more involving the audience, the orchestra, everything was on display. You could see, it was like looking at the back of an amazing clock. You'd see everything sort of working and changing, and people were really noisy. And Rich and Tognetti and I have been talking about this for ages. We hope, you know, we have...
We need a revival. Exactly.
We have period...
Sex and drugs all
absolutely.
Over again.
We have period instruments, but we don't have period audiences.
Yeah.
And so...
So would you want Pinch Guts audience to be more vocal? Is that what you want?
The wonderful thing about operas, I should say, is out of all the classical music audiences, they are the most vociferous. They do applaud, they do yell out bravo, and occasionally you might hear the occasional hiss, though it's not really that common anymore. But the problem is, I think this idea, if people are vociferous, they're told to be quiet, because since Wagner, we have a very strong, and I think it's a very important thing, you know, that when I go into a theatre, it's an amazing space. I'm in a sacred space with 1,000 other strangers, and suddenly human beings are making music for me. Mm-hmm. So it is a very special moment. I'm not sure if we can ever get back to that vociferous audience behaviour in a Baroque opera, because I think that time might have passed. But I do occasionally, as I said, Richard and I have always, how could we do it? How could we have a period audience? And the only way I think you could do it is hire some actors to get other people excited about it.
Well, lead the way. You've got to lead the charge. Your passion for Baroque opera is so evident, and I really appreciate you explaining some of those nuances. Erin Hellyard is the Artistic Director of Pinch Guts Opera. If this has piqued your interest and you'd like to know more, please have a listen to his podcast. It's called Baroque Banter. You can find out everything you need to know. Great to see you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.